Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine Podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before I begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who supported me over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. So a huge shout-out and thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. Today's episode of the podcast is another in the Know a Brewer series, where I bring awesome members of the community on to talk about how they build their EDH decks. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce today's episode, who is no surprise to anyone, welcoming back Peter, aka Mono Whiteboarder. Welcome back to the show there, Peter.
Hey, MJ, thanks for having me on.
No problem, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a hot second with life catching up to me, but everything feels like it's kind of settling down. It feels like I'm getting in a nice kind of rhythm, a rhythm to life.
Well, I'm going to have to hold you to that because there's been a definitive lack of Peter on a lot of these episodes lately, and I feel like that's kind of a problem, you know?
Yeah, we need to get the Planeswalkers back together at some point.
Yeah. I know Charles has been off doing that stuff, but eventually we will try to be back with more of the Planeswalkers. So for everyone out there interested in hearing more about our series on why Mono White in Magic the Gathering and EDH specifically is really good, definitely check out our series, originally known as White in MTG is Good, actually, but then recently renamed to The Planeswalkers. We've done about 10 episodes about a lot of things about Mono White. They're really good, so check them out if you haven't already. But I digress. Anyway, Peter, so again, the Noah Brewer series is here to ask you how you build your EDH decks from the very first thought you ever have about building a new deck all the way to having 100 cards, or at least a stack of 100 cards that you can call a deck, again, depends on what you're trying to do, that is finished and is ready to play. So again, before we get, let's just get started here. So the first question I have for you, Peter, is how do you personally start by building your decks? Do you use EDH Rec or some of the other tools out there to find a commander? Is there a certain keyword you're interested in working with? Or do you just kind of know a commander you want to build around when you see it in preview season?
So, I mean, in the case of right now, there's... And I forget the name of the commander. It's something Pause, the voice of the Emperor. I think it Emperor's voice or something. Light Pause. It's yeah. Light Pause Emperor's voice.
The new mono white enchantment. Oh, sorry, Aura Commander from Amagawa.
Neon. So, yeah. So that one, that was just previewed recently. And that's an example of a commander where I saw the commander. I knew the commander enabled a lot of weird cards that I specifically like, and so instantly I was drawn to that commander. But I think it gets at the point of what really entices me about the commander is enabling me to use some piece of jank that I already know about. So a lot of times my commander decks don't start with the commander. I'm not using a specific tool. I'm trying to find a card or action that I would not normally get to complete and kind of build a home for it and let that card drive me to the commander and then let that commander kind of mold the shell around that general idea to make it function. Sometimes it's a thematic thing. Sometimes it's a synergy thing. I remember a long time ago, I built a deck around the card Pure Reflection, which is a 3-mana enchantment that basically helps everyone create a reflection, but the reflection dies every time somebody casts a creature and then they get the reflection, so it just goes around the table. But essentially, most of my decks start around either a card or a group of cards that I haven't gotten the chance to play, but I like something about them and want to play them, and then I build a deck around them such that I get to play them.
Yeah, so now that we've talked a little bit about that first spark getting you into the deck, what is your next step? So, again, I know you've been getting a lot into the AFR mechanics, so the venture mechanics, right, specifically recently. So let's just take some of your decks you've worked on that recently, just as an example, right? And mm-hmm. once you figure out, okay, I want to play venture as a mechanic on my legendary creature, where do you then go to then try to start building that deck shell now that you have that idea and or commander in place?
Right. So what normally happens with my venture decks is, and my venture decks, if you're not familiar, want me to go through the Tomb of Annihilation. So essentially what the origin was, I saw the Tomb of Annihilation. I thought, this doesn't work well in Commander. And so I decided, yeah, I'm going to do the Tomb of Annihilation. And I figured out what is captivating about it, which was the Tomb of Annihilation is the only dungeon that you can get through in three moves. So you enter the dungeon, then you Obliette yourself, and then you create the 4/4. That's three moves. It's the quickest route through a dungeon. And then it became, okay, I know what the enticing part of the dungeon is. How do I build around that? And building around Obliette, which is a 4/1 on yourself. When you enter the Obliette, you have to sacrifice a creature, an artifact, a land, and discard a card. So it's a pretty steep punishment. So I figure out how to build around that. And it's sometimes it's a little bit of trial and error with the Tomb of Annihilation. I got really lucky on Nadar. So with Nadar, I thought, if I'm going to Obliette myself, I'm going to be losing resources very quickly. And so I need everything to be extremely cheap. And so that's what got me to the point of, okay, well, I'm going to fill the deck with one drop creatures. Mono White has a package of cards that work with one drops: Abiding Grace, Vesper Lark, Ranger of Eos, Ranger Captain of Eos. There's a handful of other cards, Revelark, Vesper Lark, all these cards that synergize with one mana creatures and extremely small creatures. So I shove all of those into a shell. And a lot of times what happens is I don't go to EDH Rec, and I don't really go to a deck building website or look for others' examples. What I do is I just hop into Scryfall and I search something specific to narrow down my card pool. So in the case of Nadar, it was one mana creatures. I pick out all the one mana creatures that sound kind of cool, and I try and kind of cut down to the best ones from there, and then let a few sneak in based on art or flavor text or something that I like about them. And my goal for the initial build isn't really to get a finished product together. It's to get something both that I can attain. So usually something fairly cheap. I cut out a lot of cheap, expensive cards that way, which helps cut down my card pool as well. And something, or I rely on cards in my collection. And eventually I end up with about 99 cards that I feel like I can get, whether through trading with people that I talk to, into my own collection, or buying them because they're fairly cheap from either my local game shop or going on someplace like TCG Player or Card Kingdom. So get the core idea, the core card, figure out what makes it unique, why would I want to do this to make it work, cut down into what's my general theme I'm looking for to make this deck work, and then find the cards that are actually accessible. And that usually actually gets me about 100 cards without having to do a whole lot of cutting. Just the process of what cards can I actually get a hold of tends to help cut down my actual card limit for me, rather than me having to make like 50 cuts like the average EDH player does.
So modest there, Peter.
Now, what can I say? I've from experience noticed that one time I posted, what's that card that kind of makes it as your last card into the deck? And you're at 98 cards and you throw this one in as your 99th card. And most of the responses were, what are you talking about? This isn't a situation that happens with EDH players. And I'm like, I don't know. It happens for me. That's how Key to the City gets in most of my decks.
Yeah, I was just about to ask there, Peter. So Key to the City is your answer to that question?
Yeah, Key to the City is like my favorite card. It's looting, it enables graveyard shenanigans, it draws you a card, it makes things unblockable for combat. Card is really good, and if you need a 99th card because you're at 98 and you forgot to order a card, or you misplaced that card you thought you had, then pick out your Key to the City. And if you need one, I have like 12 of them, so I can send you one your way.
All right, so yeah, some MTG finance tips here is that if you ever need a key to the city before they become $15 after, I guess, some big creator figures it out, the key to the city is apparently busted in like 2 years, Peter's going to be sitting on a gold mine there, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be rolling in keys to the cities, and I'll just be handing them out. You'll have to call me Mayor Whiteboarder because I'll be passing out keys to the city.
Nice. Oh. Hey. Oh man. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. I didn't think about that, but yeah. You know, you should try that out for April Fool's Day coming up here in a few months. Just change your change your title there and tell people you're going to hand out keys to the city. I think that would go over pretty well.
I'll just change it tonight, and then people will wonder, like, why in the world is he Mayor Whiteboarder now? And then they'll listen to the episode and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, fun times. Okay, Peter, so now that you've talked through your main building process, going from your commander to basically having your 99 cards plus key to the city, generally, I guess the next logical question here is, how much do you use outside resources? And when I say outside resources, I mean mostly EDH Rec. Again, I'm curious to know how much people use EDH Rec, whether you're using it kind of as a guideline, whether you like finding specific cards to run there, or if you really just don't use it at all.
I am trying to think of the last time I logged on, or I hopped on EDH Rec. And I know the last time I did it was not to look up a commander I was working on. I think it was to look up how many of a specific card appeared in a specific deck for my own, like, interest. But when it comes to deck building, I don't use EDH Rec at all. Usually, EDH Rec caters to... It does not cater to the jank brewer, I feel, as well as... It does to maybe somebody looking to optimize their EDH list. So for me, I'm usually looking to play a specific card, and I'm usually looking to play that specific card because no one plays it. And, you know, I want to feel special and unique, sparkle, sparkle. And I'm also looking for, like, cheap options. I'm basing it on what cards I have access to. So seeing a list and seeing, like, oh, people play this card and it's expensive, or I don't have it in my collection, then it doesn't help me as well. So pair that with the fact that I'm usually building mono white decks, and I have a very intimate knowledge of mono white cards and can recall cards very easily, or have cards that I know off the top of my head work together. I literally have packages in my Moxfield account of, hey, these are the card draw spells if my deck is a life gain deck, and these are the good card draw spells if my deck is a token deck. So I have a lot of resources already built for myself, such that EDH Rec doesn't come in handy for me specifically. Like, it just doesn't cater to what I'm looking for as a deck brewer. It's not to rag on EDH Rec at all. It's a great website. It has a bunch of tools and is like a wealth of information. It just isn't something that I go to for my actual deck building. I more go to it for just like my own curiosity fulfillment of, okay, who's playing this card? Where are people playing this card? Are they playing it in this deck, or is it not being played in this deck? And if not, what reason is it not being played in this deck, and things like that.
For sure, for sure. Okay, Peter, so now that we've talked about all that, I'm going to reach the final question here. And that question is, as I've traditionally done on these episodes, what is a deck you have either recently completed or are still working on or intend to complete here in the near future that you are really excited about and you really want to talk about for the next couple minutes?
Okay. What deck do I want to talk about? Well, I feel like I have to talk about my various venture decks, so I have basically the collection of venture decks I'm calling the Venture Bros. It includes the commanders from Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, each one having something to do with venture. So you have Nadar, Selfless Paladin, Acerarak, the Lich something or another. You have Varys, the Ranger, Hama Pashar, and Zolto. So the only one I don't have a list for currently put together in paper is Zolto. I have a list up on Moxfield. It's still in flux. I haven't really honed in on that one to finish it up yet, but that's the last of the Venture Bros that I need. Nadar was my very first one. That one is what kind of sparked my interest in the Tomb of Annihilation. Originally, it was a joke of just Nadar is referred to as Leroy Jenkins, and he charges into the Tomb of Annihilation as quickly as possible. If you're not familiar with the YouTube video from the, you know, caveman days of the internet, you can load up YouTube and check it out. I'm sure it'd be easy enough to find. But Nadar speedruns the Tomb of Annihilation, and I realized this is actually really cool and one of the most powerful decks I've built, amazingly. So I helped push Nadar. It's one of the few decks that I actually play Sol Ring in. Then I bought Hama Pashar as a challenge from Cole for with the Uncommon Commander podcast. And basically, I thought Hama Pashar was pretty good because doing things twice is really good. And Cole was like, I don't know, I kind of think Hama Pashar is pretty bad because she doesn't do anything when she enters the battlefield. And I was like, okay, well, I'll make her do something. And I was kind of interested in the Tomb of Annihilation, so I threw together a Hama Pashar deck. I put together a fancy list, and then I budgetified it for myself and made a $50 version, and that's the one that I built. And then after Hama came Varus. Varus was really easy to build and really cheap because I just looked up every green creature with flash so that I could cast a spell on each of my opponent's turn to venture through the dungeon. Varus actually started out going through the lines of Phandelver, and I've made some tweaks since then, so hopefully eventually Varus is going to be able to go through the Tomb of Annihilation as well, make me a bunch of wolves very quickly, and do things with like Titania and Crucible of Worlds to mitigate the loss of the land. And then finally, my most recent creation of the Venture Bros that is actually doing some awesome things and appeared on Mr. Fitzy's Fitz stream Arena of the Ancients is Acerarak. And Acerarak is in the same vein as Leroy Jenkins, aka Nadar, and Acerarak wants you to cast him a bunch to complete the Tomb of Annihilation. So let me clarify that. Acerarak wants you to cast him a bunch and get venture triggers. Most people will use those venture triggers to travel through things other than the Tomb of Annihilation, but it's the Venture Bros. They go through the Tomb of Annihilation, and so I go through the Tomb of Annihilation, complete it, and remind everyone that Acerarak has a second paragraph of text that allows you to get zombies and force everyone to sacrifice a creature. So that's the Venture Bros. Zalto hopefully will come around this year and finish off the collection, and then Varus just needs some tweaking to make him hold up in the Tomb of Annihilation. Right now he's the most fragile and has the fewest hit points, or is the lowest level if you're going with the D&D terminology. So he's going to get some upgrades and hopefully be wrapped up here shortly, and then my Tomb of Annihilation decks, aka the Venture Bros, will be complete.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I want to thank you, Peter, for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been great having you on here, as always.
Yeah, thanks, MJ. Anytime.
And again, before I forget, where can people find your blog if they're interested in hearing more about your thoughts on Mono White?
What I would recommend to everybody is go on Twitter, give me a follow at MonoWhiteBorder, and check out my bio where you'll find my blog, monowhiteborder.weebly.com. I post when I feel like it, which right now I've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but the typing fingers are starting to kind of warm up, so I might post something there about either the Avacyn deck that I just took apart or the Arden Achroma deck I just put together, or possibly the new Lightpaws deck that I'm working on and actually really enjoying as well. So who knows what you'll find on there, but if I do ever post anything, it usually goes up on my Twitter as well.
All right. And if you're interested, you can find me on Twitter at MTGInQuarantine. You can also find the entire back catalog of the Noah Brewer series, as well as the entire back catalog of the entire MTGInQuarantine podcast on the usual podcast outlets. That is your Googles, Apples, Spotify's, Player FM, Rocketcast, Pocketcast, Podbean. There's so many I never remember them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are I'm on there. And I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give another huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who supported me over at patreon.com/mtjinquarantine. So, huge shout out and thank you again to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtgandquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoy listening to this episode of the MTG and Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.